Okay, Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you want to go ahead and get started this evening?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, we'd like to welcome everybody tonight to tonight's teleseminar with Karen Scholl. And I'm your host, Melinda Garish, and my husband and I are from Shirley, Indiana, and we're the owners of Cutting Up Stables, which is an overnight stay for your horses. And so, Karen, we can go ahead and get started. How's the weather where you're at? It's like really freezing here.
Well, I think the big storm came through. I just got back into Arizona late last night and really had quite a storm come through the day before, and we're not used to that kind of a storm. So there's about 2 foot of snow on the ground, and but it's just as beautiful as can be. And but we're not
Arizona?
Used to it. Yeah, 2 foot of snow in Arizona. So you know, and they get quite a bit of snow. I'm at about 6,500 elevation, so I'm up in the, you know, the pine trees. But boy, it's a big storm. It really feels Christmassy up here.
Okay, well, get rid of it by February, okay?
Well, I head south tomorrow. I get back down to the valley to where I'm from. I've been out about 10 weeks now, so I'm like a horse that's really ready to get home. I'm almost there. I'll be there tomorrow morning.
Okay, well, good. Well, you'll be safe getting there. So we'll go ahead and get started here. We've got a really nice email from Lynn, and it says, first of all, I want to tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed all your presentations over the weekend at the Equine Affair in Massachusetts, and I didn't have to get back into my office job today. She'd be watching your videos that she bought on Saturday and spending the time with her horse and applying some of the things that she learned from you over the weekend. She said she also enjoyed talking with you both at your booth, and you were very easy to talk to, so down to earth. You asked me if I would email you concerning our conversation we had regarding how to desensitize my horse to tarps. And she said it was quite actually easily done and no real effort on my part. She said, first of all, she bought a blue 10x12 tarp, waited for a day when the day's weather and had a forecast of absolutely no wind. Then before I brought my horse, Hot Ticket, out of his paddock for the day, I spread the tarp out of the paddock, which is all dirt, no grass. Next, I put a couple flakes of hay on it in the middle. I put him out and went to work for the day. By the time I got home after work, the hay was all gone, the tarp was bunched up, and so I figured he must have moved the tarp around with his feet. Anyway, he hasn't had any issues with any tarp since. And by the way, I now feed him his hay on the tarp every day. He used to ingest the dirt quite a bit, so I would have to give him some psyllium husk quite often to purge his digestive system of the sand. Now the tarp serves to keep the hay off the dirt and sand as he eats. Now he plays with the tarp when he's done eating. I've seen him carrying the tarp around with his teeth and dropping it in different areas of the paddock. I think my horse feels special because now his hay is served to him on a placemat. On windy days, tarp corners and sides blow out upon his face as he's eating and doesn't even faze him one bit. So what a neat concept.
That's great. Well, good. That's a nice email. Thanks for sending that in. And, you know, when I talk to people about the problems that they're having with their horses, I really want to know, you know, how that worked for them, because they're standing there and, you know, they have a challenge. And when I describe to them what I would do or how to go about it, it's really amazing, because they'll think, you know, well, why didn't I think of that? And honestly, I was talking about it with a good friend this weekend. Why we get perplexed, because sometimes the answer is so simple, and yet if somebody more experienced doesn't tell us, even the simplest things can really elude us. So I really am glad to have the opportunity to talk with people and be able to give them ideas, no matter how simple, because something that's quite simple left without knowledge can turn into something very serious and even dangerous. So I was really glad to be able to help her with that. Thanks for that email. Great.
Yeah, that was nice to read. So. Okay, so now we'll go on to a question here, and it says, hello, Karen. Dan Kuhn referred me to you last summer after I was bucked off my horse and lost with what little confidence I had. He had been such a help and a wonderful educator for us since we had had our brother and sister Belgian halflingers crosses for 4 years now. He has visited us 4 times now and helped over the phone and via emails. We just got our first computer in July. I have your 3 basic videos and have watched them 2 or 3 times and will watch them many more times. Dan said you were one of his first instructors and that you are a great lady, and I really appreciate finding you too. I can ride my guys, and I'm starting to ground drive them a little, but they only go toward the barn. I fed them out in the field away from the barn, as Dan has suggested, for a month or so, till I got buffed off. And it was my fault because I got on her while she was eating just to sit on her, and I hadn't properly prepared. I get on them near the barn facing away and out in the field facing away, and I just cannot get them to walk facing away from the barn. Should I go back to feeding them away from the barn? This is probably a rhetorical question, but I wonder if I might give me, if you might give me some insight. Much appreciated, Rhonda Gleason.
Yeah. You know, horses have a little thing that has a funny little name called druthers. They would druther be back at the barn than, you know, doing what it is that we would like them to do. So, you know, you can motivate a horse, you know, several different ways. And, you know, feeding a horse away from the barn or facing away from the barn, you know, all of those things are important. But the element that's missing for you there is a lack of leadership. When a horse doesn't view you in the lead position, they have no preference towards you. And it's really a difficult thing to imagine, but if you look at things through a horse's viewpoint, they're a prey animal, and they are attracted to the leadership position. And leaders are not, oh, hey, let's go, you know, be nice to each other. Leaderships have an element of influence. And we perceive it as being mean or angry or aggressive or physical. But leadership to me is communicating with a horse in the way that horses communicate with each other. So the element of leadership is what I would do is I'm asking a horse to do anything, say walk away from the barn. I'm going to ask with gradual stages of pressure. So say I'm riding the horse and I'm going to use my reins in such a way that the horse is going to be comfortable when the nose is pointed in the direction that I desire to go. Then I'm going to gradually apply pressure with my feet down to my legs to a point where I can actually almost feel like I'm picking the horse up with my heels. The instant the horse moves in that direction, I'm going to release that pressure. But I'm not going to let my energy die. I'm going to match that horse's energy where I'm going to have a life in my body. Sometimes, you know, when we're unfamiliar with riding dynamics, sometimes what we do is riding is an active motion. Sitting, you know, we're not sitting on the horse. And a lot of times what happens is we have no energy and life in our body, and we're just sitting there. So a horse can start to recognize when there's life in Karen's body, I match that. And so that's an element of leadership that sometimes people don't understand. That the leadership, when the leader is going in a direction, that energy and life, there's energy and life in that leader's body. So as long as I have energy and life in my body, it's the horse's responsibility to match me. And when the horse slows down or turns, then that same application of pressure repeats itself. And pretty soon the horse understands, I'm more comfortable when I'm going in this direction. See, that's an element of leadership that's really important for people to understand. So when the horse turns, my reins are going to prevent the horse from turning. If I can't prevent the horse from turning from the reins, then my leg is going to actually disengage the hindquarters. And that's like the videos that you're watching there. That's why when you see that basis of communication, you know, that basis of communication is to be applied in these situations. So that's why when I talk about these very basic things, if you don't have that basis of communication, when you're not under duress, see, when your horse doesn't have druthers of getting back to the other horses or whatever that is, if you don't have it there, you're certainly not going to get it out in those kinds of situations when conditions change. And conditions change with every horse. My personal horse, you know, under certain conditions will say, hey, I want to go back with the other horses, or I want to do this, or I don't want to go by that. That's when I'm doing the exact same thing I'm describing here, where I put pressure on the horse gradually. It's not a mean or mad, but it's a gradual and continuous increase of pressure and then a release when the behavior just even starts to change. And that's what true leadership is. True leadership with a horse is being having the ability in your hands and your legs and your feet to communicate not only pressure but the release of that pressure to communicate to the horse what the behavior is that you want them to do. Melinda, we're getting background noise. I think somebody who dialed in just recently has background noise and they're not muted.
Okay. If I mute, can you get unmuted? Or I can ask everybody just to do a star 6 on their own individual phone, and that will mute individual lines. So if I could have everybody do a star 6, then that keeps you there, Karen.
Okay.
Yeah. That way we don't lose you.
Okay. That's great. The background noise, everybody hears that, and I realize we're all in.
I think we still got some star sixes going on here. Okay, I think we're good now.
Okay,
are you there, Karen?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, don't you go anywhere.
So if you ever lose me, Melinda, that's what happened. I just have to dial back in.
Okay.
So the thing is you know, you can do things, and I know I've talked about this in other teleseminars. Is, you know, you can come back to the barn and, you know, ride your horse and do, you know, the more demanding things there, and then ride your horse away, you know, for the barn sour horse, or really it's a barn sweet horse. But just those simple things, when a horse is expressing a preference of direction or speed or things like that, remember your communication goes into play there. But it's the willingness to apply enough pressure to have the horse really value the comfort enough to maintain it. So take the example of what you're describing is the horse doesn't want to walk away from the barn. Well, if you don't make that horse's choice of wanting to turn towards the barn or go towards the barn be uncomfortable in any way, why would that horse value the comfort that you give them when they're walking away from the barn? So this is where we get into trouble with leadership sometimes, especially as women. We don't want to come across as being, you know, big, mean jelly beans, and we don't want to ruin our, you know, the horse's trust in us and those kinds of things. But if you're not clear in that communication in expressing what's important to you, then the horse has no way, just because we're nice does not mean that horse recognizes us in that leadership position. And this is where we can get into trouble, you know, later on in different situations. So it's not that you're ever going to train a horse to never want to go with the other horses or never want to go back to the barn. They're always going to have that desire. I told you at the beginning of this teleseminar that I was excited to get back to my barn. You know, I've been out for 10 weeks. And so we're not saying that we're going to take the emotion and the desire and the thought process away from the horse. You can't train that out of them, but you can teach that horse to trust in your decision-making process, that going with you away from the barn is something that they would want to do too. But the way you communicate that is going back to that very basic principle of making the wrong thing difficult, the right thing easy. But sometimes we're not good at that. It sounds like something so simple, and yet it's not easy to do. And horses in that kind of situation, it's very easy for humans, especially women, because we are emotion-driven, to get frustrated, get scared if the horse is fighting us, especially if we're up on the horse's back, and all of a sudden we get into a fight. And then when our emotion is involved, it's very difficult to remain objective and simply observe the behavior so that you can improve your timing of the release of that pressure to communicate to the horse. And let me give you an example. The horse starts to go away from the barn, and by this time we've been fighting them for a little bit, and we don't realize, we're not even aware that the horse has now taken, you know, 3 steps away from the barn, but we're still keeping the pressure on, thinking, well, now he's going away from the barn, I'm going to keep the pressure on to keep the momentum up to keep him going away from the barn. So the horse says, well, gosh, I'm going away from the barn. I'm trying to do something, but you're not backing off in that pressure. And that's where horses will really start to get frustrated with us. And when that starts to happen, it's just like getting into an argument with a 2-year-old. You know, it's too late. By the time that happens, you know, you might as well just stop and regroup. You know, people will say, oh, well, don't let him get away with it. He'll win if you get off him and things like that. Well, that's just not true. It's not going well. We're being unclear to the horse. The horse is confused, and we need to get that skill set even better. So I tell people, if you get out in a situation where the horse is really fighting you and those kind of things, what it tells you is to go back to the barn and get your communication even better. because it may be there, you know, in the very basics. And, you know, when little kids are in first and second grade and they're doing really neat things, boy, they're so smart and they're so amazing, and they are. But that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, they can, you know, go and teach a physics class. You know, that's a different stage in their learning and their experience. So really going back to the foundation, it's always about going back to the foundation of our communication with horses. But those are some of the common things. And one of the things I really want to emphasize, I do this in almost every teleseminar, if you feel uncomfortable or threatened or in danger in any way, get off your horse. Get off your horse. There, you know, people, it's such a common thing. Well, don't get off him because he won. Now, if you get off him and lead him back to the barn and give him a bucket of oats, yeah, you're going to start conditioning a behavior that you'll never get away from the barn. And I know people. I know people who are stuck at their facilities because they cannot ride their horse away from the barn. They can't even get him in a trailer to leave the barn. And, you know, I see these extremes there, but it's simply because they don't understand that making the wrong thing difficult, the right thing easy, then the horse has the ability to understand what it is that we want him to do. And more importantly, the horse can buy into it because there's something in it for him. When I'm walking away from the barn, there's something in it for me. But in that situation, the horse is just thinking, well, when I go towards the barn, there's something in it for me. But when I go away from the barn, there's not. So that's how you change a horse's mind in that situation. So when you get off that horse, do some very basic ground things to teach the horse, hey, I'm the one making decisions here. And that's the element, the key basis of who's in charge, who's in the leadership position is very simple. It's who's making the decisions. And when your horse is the one making the decisions, it's because they view themselves in a position of leadership in that situation. And it's nothing personal. It just is what it is right there. But then you have the opportunity to change that horse's mind, and you can do it very effectively on the ground, not in a punishing kind of way, but get that clear again. I can't tell you how important that is. My horsemanship, you know, in early years, it just totally changed when I stepped down and with confidence helped my horse understand who's making the decisions, and you can step back on and have that horse go, great, we're cool now. And that's how relationships are. It goes along good, and then it unravels and falls apart on us, and then it comes back again. But every time it unravels on us and we reassert ourselves or reestablish leadership, that role of leadership gets deeper and deeper and deeper, to where one day your horse just doesn't even question you, or if they do, it's kind of a, hey, Karen, what do you think? And I go, you know what, I think we're good to go. And the horse goes, great, just checking in. You know, that's the ultimate in mutual trust between horse and human.
Okay. Well, that's great. And good luck there, and hopefully she'll be riding away from the barn soon.
Riding off in the sunset. Away from the barn.
That's the dream, isn't it? Okay. So, well, we'll move on here to another question, and this one's from Marlena. And it says, Karen, my daughter and I attended your 4-H clinic in Marshfield, Missouri. Thank you, by the way, for stopping there. I have a fox trotter gelding that is my buddy. However, I've had to have his stifles cut due to us severely embeding his equipment. We followed the vet's directions, and at 5 weeks, we started leash walks to build muscle at the time. At that time, he started bucking when he is startled in any way, not normal for this horse. I was even kicked in the chest once and struck out a couple more times before I could roll under the fence. I did try to do some of what you taught us at the event. I am the head mare. Don't push past me and stay out of my space. This works for a week or two, perfect ground manners and good interaction, and some reason he will see a make-believe monster hiding in the trees and sets to bucking. I try to one rein and to get away from others. I am trying to get the money for your videos. I know they will help, but is there anything in the meantime that I can do? Thank you, Marlene Burks. Marlena.
Okay. You know, probably the main thing that I'm picking up on in this question is this idea that we can get the horse to have perfect ground manners, and now we're done, and the behavior is never going to change. Okay, that expectation and that idea that we have to say, oh, well, this horse is now trained and that we'll never have to do that again is really unrealistic. And I relate it back to human relations. You know, I ask people, you know, who's a parent of grown children, adult children? And they'll raise their hand and I'll say, well, when are you done being a parent? And they all go, oh, my gosh, never. You know, and Melinda, I know you're parents of grown children. And you're always in that role of leadership. Now, I think it's hard as children become adults to not treat them like babies. You know, there's different stages. But it's the same thing with a horse. A horse's behavior, it's like the lead mare, is always proving that leadership every moment in every day and in every way. And that's just the truth of it. So, you know, and I do the same thing with my horses. You know, can my horses run over me? Absolutely. Can my horses strike out at me? Absolutely. So I'm in a position when I walk out there, the lead horse says, oh, I'm deferring leadership. Here comes number one. Now I'm in number two position. So it's an understanding and an expectation that you're aware all the time, and it sounds like if you're doing some things, the awareness has shifted. And sometimes this is a challenge. Horses have an injury, especially an injury like you're describing, where a lot of times the process of healing puts them, you know, confined to a stall. And then we take a horse that's designed to be moving and out and in motion, you know, 24 hours a day. Horses only sleep about 4 hours a day. And we take a horse and we confine them to stall rest so that they can eat. And it's like, you know, kids on vacation when they're cooped up in the car all day driving. You know, my dad would pull over and go, turn them loose. You know, all four of us would just hit the ground running out there. And sometimes it's not unheard of that I've heard of people having problems with horses that are coming back from an injury. And, boy, the behavior gets pretty even downright aggressive because these horses are so frustrated that their motion has been restricted like that. So, again, in every element, you know, now as conditions change, leadership becomes even more important. It's always important, but, you know, when you have horses in those kind of conditions, it's even more important to not only establish it, but be willing to reestablish it in every moment, you know, in every moment with the horse. So number one thing I do is change your expectation that, okay, we have perfect ground manners, and that's it. You know, horses are going to challenge your leadership. You know, just like children, they're going to challenge your leadership all the time. And in absence of leadership, they'll take over, take off, take advantage of, and not because they're being bad horses. It's their nature to move up, to always be trying to move up in the leadership class forever and ever for their whole life. So that's the number one thing I would change. I would just be willing to demonstrate that leadership from everything that you're learning, you know, all the time, and that behavior should change. But please get that change. Striking, horses striking, and, you know, kicking into the chest. Boy, this is a thing I find, and I had a horse in Massachusetts Equine Affair. And, you know, it's funny, people get uncomfortable when I'm firm enough with the horse. But, you know, that horse has no problem whatsoever climbing into me. And it's really interesting to me that, you know, I might deliver a mama's bite to this horse, and people go, oh, well, shoot, that horse, you know, he'd run me over. I'd be laying bleeding on the ground, and he'd go over and grab. He wouldn't have to go to therapy or anything. So please do not put yourself into a position of getting hurt. Be willing to demonstrate leadership all the time. And the last thing I can tell you here, you know, if you think about it, I have Berg and Deb out in the pasture right now. When do you think the last time Berg bit Deb? You know, it was probably 15 minutes ago. See? And that's horses communicating with each other. And it doesn't, he hates them, it doesn't mean to him. It's just their form of communication, reasserting leadership all the time, whenever you feel like. And that's horse dynamic right there.
Okay. Karen, you're kind of breaking in and out just a little bit. You might check your location.
Well, my location's okay. There's something clicking in the background.
Okay.
I would get the background on somebody's phone. If folks have not, when you log in, maybe what we should do, Melinda, is tell people when they log in, just hit *6 automatically, and that'll
mute
that background.
So if you've not done that, please do a *6, and we'll go ahead and keep going here. So. Okay, Karen, this next question is from Mary Jo, and it says, Karen, my quarter horse mare is 11 years old, and in the last several months has become a very difficult to saddle. She gets very nervous and jumps around when I start to saddle her. I proceed very slowly, and each time she moves, I put her back feet back in the same spot. I stay very calm and just try to reassure her, and she will slowly calm down, but the next time it is a repeat. I inspected her back after a ride, and the sweat pattern seems to be even. I touch all over her back, and she doesn't seem to have any tender spots. I use the Reinsman pad and the Circle Y Flex Light saddle. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. I'm not familiar with a Flex Light saddle, but to me it sounds like there's a flexible tree or something flexing in some way. To me, trees, just like if you've ever had backpacks, you know, with aluminum frames and structure, that actually, a rigid frame, in my experience, has more stability and more comfort on the back of the horse than anything that's come out on the market that has any kind of flexibility to it. The reason is you want your weight and your motion to be in as close of alignment and matching the motion and movement of the horse. Whenever you have something that flexes in between you and the horse, it delays your motion slightly and puts more torque on the horse's back. And I know people have tried, you know, every kind of thing from flex trees to pads and all kinds of things, but I'm around real working cowboys, people who will, ride 4 to 6 horses in their I'm around working cowboys. I'm fortunate enough to be around people who are really using horses for their livelihood and depend on the health of their horses and the condition of their back and their physiology. And it's really amazing, you know, one of my good friends, Dan Moyer, said, you know, I'm always open-minded and always looking at saddles, and he made a very good point. He said, Karen, working cowboys have been using horses for their livelihood. Their horses have to be good, you know, for what they're doing. Their life depends on it. And a solid tree is the most comfortable thing. He said, if, and people have tried to reinvent things, and he said, but everybody keeps coming back to the wooden tree, rawhide wrapped, and a good pad, you know, a well-fitted saddle with a good solid pad, a wool pad that breathes, not synthetic material that does not breathe. And if you just go back to the basics, I keep going back to the basics. I've tried all kinds of things. And it could be something even if you're using, you didn't mention the cinch, but sometimes, and it's not my preference to use neoprene cinches. They're hot. They're really hot. It's like wearing a rubber suit. They feel real cushy to the human. We go, ooh, that's nice and cushy, and that must feel good to the horse. But if you've been around a horse that's in a neoprene cinch or a synthetic saddle or saddle pad, you ride that horse, you know, and really use that horse for a few hours, you literally can't keep your hand in there underneath the cinch, between the cinch and the horse's stomach, because your hand burns. You know, and I've actually seen horses that will actually even scald from it if people aren't aware of that, even if it's vented. So I go back to just simple materials, mohair cinch, and these working cowboys, they just won't use any other material, because what's been good for, you know, how many years is really still good. So you do want to rule out anything physical. The other piece that's going on.
Please go ahead and start yourself. I can hear some background noise again. If you have not muted yourself, please do so. Thank you.
Thanks. But the other piece of it, too, and this is, you want to rule out anything physical, but the thing that you're describing there is when the horse is having trouble or getting nervous, I suspect that the problem, you know, you've ruled out the back or the physical thing, but what you're describing to me is if you walk up and the horse starts fretting or moving around and that kind of thing, if you stop what you're doing and you calm yourself down and you wait for the horse to calm down and you describe the horse slowly calming down, you've actually in that moment reinforced the fretting behavior. And this, I see this in almost every event, every clinic that I do, because in our mind we think, oh, the horse is upset, so we need to back off. And we need to soothe the horse and calm them down. Well, if comfort is what shapes the behavior in horses, we actually are inadvertently conditioning the horse to fret. Because they fret, we back off, and then the horse slowly calms down. Then we go to take the saddle up there again, and the horse starts fretting again, and then we back off. And in that instant, the horse has trained us to back off. And it's really an amazing thing. I've seen people actually condition a horse's behavior to even be afraid. The horse becomes afraid, and we stop and soothe them. And this happens even in human relations. I give the example of somebody who is a drama queen. We all have friends who are a drama queen. And, you know, why are they drama queens? I mean, do they stay up all night going, oh, I can't wait to irritate everyone around me tomorrow with my drama? You know, no. People aren't even aware that they're demonstrating that behavior. Although on our side, on the outside, we're irritated and we're thinking, why is this person putting so much effort into irritating everyone around them? It doesn't work that way. Drama is inadvertently reinforced by people's response to it. So say somebody complains and somebody else tries to help. Sometimes, and there's a difference, you know, when we're empathetic and people have problems and we're supporting them, but my favorite question to people is going, gosh, what do you plan to do about that? And it's funny because people who are in that pattern of behavior will look at me and go, boy, I don't know, I hadn't thought about that. I was just complaining, and you're supposed to be nice and listen to me. And we don't realize that we get into these patterns of behavior. So with a horse, if you walk up with a saddle and the horse goes, oh, here we go, and he starts fretting, and you wait and hesitate or rub him on the neck and soothe them and that kind of thing, we actually, in that scenario, we don't realize it, but we're reinforcing the behavior. So what I would do there is I would do the opposite. When we walked up, and I'd start with a saddle pad first, because usually that's a lot lighter than the saddle, and I'd walk up, and I'd throw that pad on and off the back of the horse, and I wouldn't do this tied at first, because I want that horse to drift. Sometimes the horses get claustrophobic, we tie them up, and then we come up with something, and the way we carry a saddle can sometimes make us look like a great big bear, and all these things, and that's why in my videos I show people how to throw a saddle on politely. It's deliberate, but it's polite. We'll go in and try to, you know, gather up all our, you know, cinches and everything and set it lightly on the horse's back so we don't bother them. I'll tell you, when I start a colt, I swing that big old saddle up on their back first time. But I did lots of things ahead of that, so by the time I get to swinging that big old heavy saddle up over there, the horse is okay with it. See, horses are frightened of anything new, different, sudden, or abrupt. The good news is they very quickly desensitize to anything new, different, sudden, or abrupt. And that's what relates back to the very first question in this teleseminar with the tarp. You know, the horse is scared of a tarp, but, you know, has a horse ever been killed by a tarp? You know, no. But it's so unusual to, you know, in a horse's viewpoint, that they're scared of it at first, and then now, you know, you're telling me that he's carrying around in his teeth, and they'll chase other horses with it, you know, just for fun. You know, and 3 days ago, the horse was, you know, blown through fences trying to get away from it. So this is the mind of the horse, and sometimes we are just totally perplexed by how they're thinking or how do we move through and shape the behavior. So what I would do is have the horse online, just a halter and lead. I do my basic communication, you know, that I show on the video that you're doing, and then I would take the pad at first, or even do a tarp, and get it to where you can throw that tarp on and off the back of that horse to where that horse is just like, well, if I'm moving my feet around and getting upset, she's going to keep tipping my nose back to center, drifting with me, and continue to throw the tarp. The moment I stand still and relax, the tarp stops. And then here comes the tarp again. The horse starts moving his feet, oh, I'm scared, or whatever. And you're just going to keep going on and off, approach and retreat. That's a real key technique that I try to describe to people, because when it approaches the horse, being a prey animal, they say, oh, it's going to kill me. And then it retreats, and they say, oh, it didn't kill me. Oh, it's going to kill me, didn't kill me, kill me, didn't kill me. Oh, it's just a silly tarp or stick or string or rope or saddle, you know, fill in the blank. So to me, it's about not doing less with the horse and stopping and soothing. And if you think about it, even when you said, oh, I'm going to put the horse's feet back in the same spot, well, the horse says, wow, I got released, and the person soothed me and then moved my feet back in the same spot, and they go, wow, okay. And you're actually teaching the horse inadvertently to get fretful and move, because that little moment right there, the horse doesn't relate to it. The horse doesn't go, oh, my feet going back into that same spot, oh, some sort of correction, and that's going to make me not fret with the saddle. They don't. It's too far away, you see, so they can't really piece it together, you know. It's like a child misbehaving, and we, you know, discipline them when their father gets home, and the kid, it doesn't work because there's too much time in between. There needs to be an immediacy of shaping that behavior. So that's what I would do, is I would take the horse and I would do more. So like in another teleseminar, somebody was saying, well, my horse is kind of nipping at me when I brush him. I go, man, I'd get brush in each hand, and I'd brush and brush and brush and brush and brush and brush and brush, and when that horse relaxes, I'd stop brushing. You know, and you want to keep yourself safe. Don't have it to where your horse can come around and, you know, nip you or something like that. But hopefully that gives you the idea that doing more with the horse gives the horse the opportunity to desensitize to it and realize, gosh, my feet are moving around. Nobody's going to stop and soothe me and then take the time to put my little feet back into the spot that I started at. So I hope that helps you. There's a little saying, if you want to be good with horses, look at what everybody else is doing and do the opposite. And what that really means is not to be insulting or anything in any way, but the way we act around horses and our approach is we act like humans. And we have a very different thought process than horses do. So if we view our behavior from our horse's viewpoint and the immediacy of the response, you know, we can start answering our own questions in those situations, and especially around, you know, conditioning and shaping behavior. We don't realize that we're actually contributing to that behavior. And you indicated that to me in the very beginning of your question when you said, for some reason, now my horse doesn't want to be saddled. So again, ruling out anything physical, which sounds like you're doing already, I'd really check and double check on the flex ride saddle, because there's a lot of products out there on the market that seem really, really good, and I've tried lots of different things. But I check on that, check on your cinch, you know, rule out anything there, and then look at it behaviorally as well.
Okay. Well, Mary Jo, thanks for submitting your question, and good luck with that. And Karen, are you ready to move on to another question?
Sure.
Okay. This one's from Lorraine. And she says, my horse is green broke. She does very well with lots of ground work exercises and shows some resistance at time when we begin. Lazy and shows some defiance. And I move, push her through these sticky points, and then she is fine and does most things smoothly after waking up. However, I'm not finding our groundwork to translate into the saddle. When I hop in the saddle and ask her to trot, she fusses and resists strongly in the beginning, and I try to push her through it. Sometimes she will trot sluggish, and other times she will just fuss, and I guess I'm cautious of continuing to ask and encourage her through this fussy stage when she is strongly resist, so I don't have to deal with a stubborn episode. Is there any way to work this out on the ground more so I don't have to challenge myself to hunker down for some bucking in the saddle when I ask her to trot? And no, she does not have any physical issues or pain preventing her from trotting. Thank you, Lorraine.
Yeah, and Maureen, you know what this gets back to is changing your expectations. And it's funny sometimes, again, it goes back to, you know, we're shaping the behavior. If you ask your horse to say on the ground, trot to the right on a circle, and if you put a feel on that rope, and this is a piece, I'll bet you a cookie that the problem lies in a very common thing that I see, and it may not be with you, but I just see it so often that's why I'm willing to bet, you know, your favorite cookie on it, is you're not putting a real feel on your lead rope. And I see this all the time. I see it taught on RFD TV, and what people do is they have this, you know, dead fish handshake kind of feel on the lead rope to direct the horse off on the ground, and then we go towards the horse with our rhythmic pressure of our stick or the tail of the rope or whatever, and then the horse says, well, you didn't give me any direction in your feel, and now you're coming at me, and now you're yelling at me. And that's where horses will get resistant, because in their viewpoint, it's unfair. So what I try to teach people in the clinics is when you put a feel, and I've had people who have been doing psychology-based training with their horse for years get stuck right there, or have a horse that pins its ears, or it goes, but it goes too fast, or it goes slow, or whatever. You know, I just was with some friends at the National Finals Rodeo here this last weekend, and we were all, you know, a big group of table, and we're dancing with different friends and stuff, and each person that dances with you has this totally different, you know, feel. Some people there's no direction, some people there's too much, and then there's somebody who's just right. You know, they're, you can follow the feel, you can move freely, it's not, they're not in your way, and they allow you to move, you know, freely with it, but they're not holding this, you know, dead fish, no direction kind of a feel with you. And I like to compare the feel that we give to the horse is very similar to what we feel from a good dance partner. There is a direction there. And if you don't have that, to me, putting the feel on the lead line is like putting the car in gear. And then your rhythmic pressure should come second to it. It shouldn't happen at the same time. It should come second to it. So I put a feel on that rope, I offer that to that horse. And they have the opportunity to follow that feel and move. If they don't, then my rhythmic pressure supports my suggestion to move in the direction I'm offering. Okay, so it's two pieces right there. And what you're describing right there is the horse gets fussy and says, man, this isn't my, you're not my favorite dance partner yet, but you're working on it, and I want to compliment you on that. But really check on it. Make sure you're not stepping towards the horse or trying to go around to the side to get him to go forwards. Really just stand straight in front of your horse, put a feel on that, ask the horse to come forwards first, then direct them out to the side, and then support it with your rhythmic pressure. Now, if you're confident that you're offering that in those stages, and that's where I suggest, you know, getting the Riding from the Ground DVD, because you can watch it in slow motion and see those pieces there, because horses learn in sequences. If you're confident in doing that and your horse isn't following that feel, then you offer a wave of warning and then a mama's bite with your string, and that is making physical contact with the horse. So when I interact with horses, and like at the expo in Massachusetts here that I went to, some of those horses, I'd give them a feel, I'd offer them the best deal, then I would support it with rhythmic pressure, and then I would bite. And that horse is going, hey, wait a minute, I'm supposed to stand here and fuss at you for a couple minutes before. And I go, listen, if you don't have time to fuss, you need to hurry up, you need to go now. Not in a minute, see, because if we go along and go through those sequences and then the horse starts fussing and we back off or we go, oh, he's fussing, I don't want to bite him then because he's fussing, what will he do then? I'll tell you what, I'd bite that horse and then put it all down, even if the horse doesn't go off in a circle. So the sequence that I offer the horse, because horses learn in sequences, put a feel on that rope. Ask them to come forwards, and Melinda, you saw that at your clinic there and at your place, how many horses just, people said, oh, I never knew to ask for a step, for them to step forward first.
Difference, yeah.
And so that's how it translates up onto the horse's back. If you don't have it on the ground, see, then what you get on the back is going to be even less. So the good news is, and you're right on track, you can get off that horse, and you're asking me the question, okay, how do I get this without getting into a big fight or causing bucking? And you're right on track. That is exactly where that's going to go if you don't, you know, help that horse understand. So the horse is only being resistant because it's confused by your direction, the direction of the feel. But almost, I'll bet you it's 85% of the time, it's a lack of a real feel on that lead rope. You should be making physical contact. And for some reason, everybody's saying, so it's this, you know, whoopee, I've got this big, you know, I actually have a name for it. I call it soggy rope syndrome. And it's one of the places where people get really stuck and they don't realize that a horse will learn to follow steady pressure. If I do it right, I don't need a stick or the end of the rope or anything to have my horse go. That horse should feel like, you know, floating, you know, and staying inside of that halter. I should be able to take a feel on my lead line and have my horse go wherever that feel directs them, you know. So not everybody presents those techniques kind of in that approach or in that way. And what I see is what you're describing is horses, they get mad. And I don't remember, it's a lot of times mares will not tolerate our inadequacies in our field. They get very incensed by it. Geldings, they're more forgiving. I don't. Did it say it was a mirror or not?
No, I don't think she specified.
Yeah, but a lot of times mirrors get mad. And
she does. So I bet it is. Yeah, mayor. It is a mayor.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And mirrors, you know, geldings kind of go, oh well, you stink, but you know, I'll just act like I don't know what you're doing. And not all geldings; these are generalizations. But oftentimes, mirrors are much less tolerant of the beginning stages of us developing our field. So that's what I would go back to and check on that, because when horses get resistant up on the back, I tell people, boy, step off, and I'll bet you if you put a feel on that lead rope and say, hey, you need to go now. You'd find the same resistance right there. So you can go back to old teleseminars and listen to some of those examples as well. But I'll bet you that's where the trouble lies. And once that gets better, your horse will go, well, now that you're better at communicating it, I'd be happy to do it. But mirrors are not, they're kind of known for, in my experience, to not really fill in for us in those early stages.
Well, Karen, I don't know what kind of cookies you like, but I listened to you enough to know you probably won that cookie. hopefully that helps her. And please touch back with us and email us and let us know how you're getting along. We'll move on to another question then. This one's from Lori, and it says, hi, Karen. I spoke to you at the equine affair, and I'm the one with the claustrophobic mare. And I overheard you saying to someone that there's a bareback pad that you like, but it wasn't at the show. Maybe you could talk about what you think is important and the differences in them. And I realize you might not want to endorse a particular product, so I can be a savvy shopper. I do use to ride bareback a lot in the winter, but I'm older and a bit more fragile these days. And thank you for your information, Lori.
Great. Well, I'll tell you what. I don't mind endorsing any product that I like. I see lots of products out there on the market. I really am glad to go to all these big the horse expos, and also at the National Finals Rodeo. There's three huge convention centers, you know, with hundreds, literally hundreds of vendors. So I do get to get out and see all the different products that are out there. And I really appreciate, you know, even if I don't like the product, I appreciate what people are doing to try to help others, you know, with it. I very rarely find somebody who's doing something like that to make the big bucks, you know, because, you know, it's not usually that. It's usually people who have had a need themselves and they develop something because it's not on the market and they put it out there for other people to benefit from as well. Again, some things I personally like and other things I don't particularly care for, but the bareback pad. One thing with bareback pads, they have no structure in the back. There's no tree in it. There's no structure that fits it onto the horse's back. If you think of a saddle with a regular, say, a Western tree in it, there's a rigid structure to it. And so if you inadvertently put weight in one stirrup, the panel on the opposite side engages and holds that saddle in place, you know, if it's properly shaped to the back of the horse. And it's really key to understand that in a saddle or a bareback pad, there is no structure there. So please do not get a bareback pad with stirrups. Just don't get it. That is on my – I have five products that I should put it on the website, but they should be forbidden in the horse industry, because people tend because we walk all the time, our balance tends to be go towards our feet. And when I see people ride, their feet are forward and the heels are sticking down, they're trying to weight themselves in their feet, which is a very natural thing to do for a, you know, an upright creature like us. That's where we balance from. But it's to put our full weight in the seat is where our balance really develops. And then you can shift a little bit. You know, there are times if a horse really turns hard, I'll feel the weight change in one foot on it. But a saddle is designed. That's why it's structured the way it is. So please do not get any kind of a bareback pad with any kind of stirrups on it. The other thing is a bareback pad should be set up with a regular latigo, a regular leather latigo. When I see them, people think, oh, well, it's just a little, you know, fuzzy thing to protect my jeans and keep the hair off of my jeans. Well, you know, it's really not. It's something that you can build your riding confidence by getting the advantage of riding bareback, which gives you great balance on the horse. Because in saddles, we don't realize we can be leaning forward, backwards, or to the left or to the right. And depending on the structured saddle, a lot of times people won't know it. That's why you can take a riding lesson, and the riding instructor is saying you're collapsing your hip, you're collapsing your left hip, and you're going, I don't feel it. But if you looked at a photograph of yourself, you'd see it. So a saddle can sometimes confuse our body awareness into thinking, well, we're really balanced and straight. When you sit on a bareback pad or just straight on the back of the horse, you know it. If you're a little bit out of balance, your body knows it and makes that adjustment and recalibrates instantly. The problem with riding bareback on the horse, you know, just with nothing on the back of the horse, is our tendency because, you know, depending on the conformation of the horse, sometimes the wither area can become very uncomfortable for us. And I've had horses that I've caught myself, because of their conformation, I've caught myself kind of bracing myself and not being really in balance and moving in a rhythmic motion, matching the motion of the horse, because I'm protecting myself, you know, from that area. So a bareback pad can just put you at ease and give you a more relaxed seat. The other thing is, my horse Bergante, he does not like my bony behind on his back. I'll be sitting there bareback on him and teaching, and I'll feel him shifting underneath me and going, and everybody's had a little kid sit up on their lap, and some little kids, man, they got a little bony butt. It's like they may only weigh 40 pounds, but it's like, ow, here, move over here. So it can be uncomfortable for the horse as well. So you want to have a pad that has a nice density in the material to it. So you want to have a leather latigo. You want to have a regular mohair cinch hooked up to it. Please do not use fuzzy cinches. Do not use nylon latigos. That's another thing that is definitely on my outlawed list. Please change out to leather latigos for several reasons, but you can see that on my website. There's so much to tell people in a teleseminar. I was running out of time. But the saddle pad that I like mostly, the one on the market that I really recommend, is the one that Mr. Pirelli makes. I was involved in his organization when he developed it, and I just honestly have not found anything better, and I'm always looking. There's a suede outside to it, so it gives you a really nice feeling of confidence, because it's like rough out leather. When I was building my confidence, you know, riding bareback and used that as a transition tool to eventually, you know, nothing on the horse's back, that with a pair of chaps or chinks, I could jump in that. I could do, somebody could flag my horse. I could, you know, have that front end sweep across, and it was wonderful because it taught me, with confidence, how to sit, no matter if my horse zigged or zagged or whatever. Because, you know, I see people ride, you know, pretty confidently, you know, on a bareback horse, and they'll be riding along on asphalt at a horse expo or something like that. And I go, well, that's really great, but what if the chihuahua comes out and, you know, spooks your horse from under the truck, and all of a sudden, you know, you're on a runaway, you know? And sometimes that's what people do. They say, oh, my horse is so gentle, and I'm riding bareback. And I go, well, that's great, but it doesn't mean you don't need to go back and really have your horse do some maneuvers so that with a good transition tool like that bareback pad that is secure. It's secured to the horse with leather latigos and a regular mohair cinch. The underside has it's called medical fleece, and it breathes for the horse. And then the top side has a handle right between your legs in the front, so you can hold on right there. You know, if you do get into trouble. But I had a gal, she was riding that at a clinic, had trouble with her horse, and she went to bail off, and she couldn't. She went, wow, I was really stuck. You know, and you don't want something that's going to trap you, but she was amazed. She thought she could just slip off and jump off, you know, onto the ground, and she was so secure that she kind of, you know, was able to help her horse through that little spot of trouble, and boy, her confidence just went, you know, really through the roof. So that's the product out on the market that I really have the preference for. I haven't found anything better, and, you know, and I'm looking all the time, but that is a really, really great tool to build your confidence riding bareback with your horse.
Okay. Karen, you know, we really appreciate all the homework you do on researching different products. I mean, I know you really put a lot of time in that. And actually, if any of you are on the fence about buying the Photonic Light that Karen has on our website, I can certainly tell you it's amazing how it works. And it's got a physician here in Indiana that's absolutely puzzled and as to how it has sped up the healing process on my elbow. So if you're on the fence on that one, definitely it does work. It does heal. I had a dislocated elbow that took about 8 weeks to heal versus 6 to 12 months. So and they're just puzzled how it works. And I'm excited because I'm back on working on the horses. So, and talking about other products, you know, it's time for Christmas, and you know, guys are always wanting to know what to get their wives for Christmas. So check on Karen's website. There's all kinds of different ideas and products out there that they could do some easy Christmas shopping husbands can do. So,
yeah. Well, now, I'll tell you, I was just with my friend Dan Moyer, who is a working cowboy. I mean, he's a grandfather. I mean, he's very, very good. He's cowboyed for many, many years. But I'll tell you the thing he said to me. He goes, Karen, you really have to encourage people to get those socks that you sell. And yeah. I said, well, why, Dan? He goes, because it made my wife happy. He said she was going down there all the time, you know, picking up socks at Walmart, and, you know, and I was wearing them out. And he said, these socks do not wear out. And I said, you know, I haven't even told. I mean, that's what I found. I have some of my socks that are, I know I've had them more than a year, almost 2 years. And I don't think about those things because that's what I expect a product to do. But I kind of forget that the other, you know, socks that I had, you know, didn't do that. And I, you know, I told people at the expo, you know, it's not been my dream to carry socks. But when I found these, at this deal in Las Vegas, I'll bet there is probably 800 to 1,000 vendor booths. One vendor booth carried these socks. And I don't know why everybody in the entire horse industry it hasn't just changed over because they are really just that good. Really,
we still need to find them for the toddlers, though, because Elisa's just horrible, Karen, still with her.
I'm working on it, Melinda. I was at Melinda's there, and her three-year-old niece, between Melinda and I both, we had to keep pulling up her socks and her little boots. And you know, it was kind of cute, you know, the first 7 times.
Yeah.
After that, I'm like, okay. Because they just started carrying children's sizes, and so I'll start getting it. And they just started carrying crew height sizes too. So if you don't want a tall, you know, over the calf sock, there's shorter ones as well. But we'll start branching off. I know Mark's listening to this right now. He's going, oh no, more inventory. Yeah, all that. But
yeah.
they really are just that good. And if I carry something, I don't carry a lot of products, but the things that I carry are things that I have found to be absolutely the best, but they're hard to find. If they're easy to find, like Mr. Pearlie's bareback pad, you know, I don't want to carry that. Nobody's getting rich on a little bit of market up on this kind of stuff, but if it's easy to find, I recommend it. If it's hard to find, I carry it. So things like the kangaroo hide gloves, the socks, the clip, things like that. That's why I carry those things for people to benefit from. And I want to say, before we hang up here, I want to really thank the folks that I met in Massachusetts. There were so many people that came up and said, I've listened to your teleseminars. If I miss it, I listen to it later. And what you said worked for my horse. You know, because I'll say, well, how did it work? And they'll go, it worked great. And I go, oh, good. You know, because I don't always get that feedback, and I really appreciate it. People, that was my second year there in the Massachusetts Equine Affair, and people came up and just, I am so glad to be able to be in a position to be able to help people with their horses because they're so special. They're such a special element. They're not just a hobby. They're a lifestyle for us. And there are therapy. There are, you know, connection to nature. They, you know, really help us be better human beings, in my opinion. And if I can share some bit of experience or knowledge or a perspective or an opinion that helps other people, honestly, that is what I'm put on this planet for. And when I get that feedback that it made a difference and it helped people, I am so glad. Because I'll tell you what, there are easier jobs on the money that pay on the planet that pay a lot more money. So it's not for that kind of a motivation. I really just am so glad to have the opportunity to help people with these horses, because the horses want this from us. The horses want to do the right thing. They just don't know what it is because our ability to communicate with them is something that we will continue to develop, you know, for our whole lives, myself included. So if we can just enjoy the journey, lighten up a little bit, have more fun, you know, and ask those questions. I talked, you know, solid at the expo. I was there first thing and, you know, tried to help as many people as I could. And people would say, oh, I don't want to bother you. I said, you know what, be polite on Monday. This is what I'm here for, and I really enjoy, and you could probably tell from how I do these teleseminars, I really have a passion for helping people, and I'll talk to anybody in any way. If it helps you with your horse, that is absolutely my favorite thing to do in the whole world. So if you have questions, please don't hesitate to put them into to submit them. We may have too many. We won't be able to select them, but you know, please get them in the queue. And if that question can help you, or your question might help somebody else also, you know, keep that in mind. But please keep those questions coming. I really enjoy doing this every month for you.
Okay, Karen, just real quick, we're running out of time, but you want to talk just real quick about your camp that's in February. We've got several probably interested in coming out there where it's warm.
Well, I'll tell you, everybody loves coming to Arizona in the wintertime, and it's a total immersion camp. All the food's taken care of, your housing's taken care of. You know, there's no maids coming in making your bed or anything like that. But it is absolutely a tremendous experience. I know people who have said, gosh, I came for that week or that 2 weeks, and everything took a completely different shift. You know, when I come in and do a three-day clinic, even though I have 3 days, I am talking this fast. Melinda, you know that. I'm trying to tell everybody everything they need to know, you know, in the 3 days. When people have 5 days, they have more hands-on time. They can practice. But still, I don't care if somebody comes for the entire 2 weeks. I am talking nonstop. We have our discussion sessions through the mealtime, through lunches. I leave you alone at breakfast, but we'll have our discussions through lunches, so we utilize that time. Dinner, you know, we have dinner, but we usually have an evening session. And boy, sometimes we'll go along and I'll think, oh my gosh, I'm killing these people. We're talking until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and I'll give them an evening off and finish at 8 or something. They'll go, oh no, keep talking, you know. But there's so many opportunities to learn in so many different ways, and it really does make a tremendous difference. I see such a huge change in people and their horses from those week-long courses. So it's a very reasonable, it's one of the most reasonable formats of week-long courses that I've seen in the market, and I really try to keep that. The facility that we use is really good at keeping their expenses down, and so, you know, we pass that on to people. But it's just tremendous. I can't say enough about those formats. And it's one of my favorites. I love the three-day clinics, but I really enjoy those 2 weeks because it really makes that much difference in people when they have time to process and practice with me still there rather than going, hey, okay, I'm downloading information for 3 days and good luck, see you next year. You know, you really get a much deeper understanding of these principles and concepts with our shaping behavior with horses.
And Karen, Elisa's here saying, tell everyone she's on TV too. Don't forget she's on TV.
Oh, Elisa is Melinda's 3-year-old granddaughter, and she's watching all the television shows. And I want to tell you, we had some exciting news. There's a new network, horse network, that's coming out, and I got to meet with them this weekend and visit with them, and I'm really excited about the opportunities there. So the Dish Network 9411 airs 4 times a week. So and we may be expanding into this new format as well.
Okay, great. So, well, we'll get ready to wrap this up. We want to thank everybody tonight that's submitted their questions and tuning in. And make sure you get those questions in again and listen in on January 13th. I can't believe we're at that time of year already. Karen, we want to thank you for your time tonight and thank everyone else for tuning in. And Merry Christmas to everyone and have a safe trip home, Karen.
Thanks very much. And the one last piece, I'll be at the Arizona Horse Festival at Westworld in Scottsdale this week, and it starts, it goes Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So if my Arizona listeners are on, please come over and visit, and I'd love to hear about your horses and your progress with your horses. Thank you very much, Melinda, and say goodnight to Elisa for me.
Okay, we will. Be careful. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Good night.